Hey, Reggie, how you doing, my friend? What do you mean, What are you going, That's a Honeymooners reference there, Reggie. You don't even know what that show is or the reference. But it doesn't matter. I get a kick out of it. All right. So, are you ready to do 382? So am I. You're all set? No submarine sandwich today, huh? No? Later. All right, here we go. Star, smile strong. Get that finger on the trigger. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. I didn't like that one. Yeah, a little too much. A little too quick. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. But if you're a longtime listener, you know that just hitting play is not enough. Your job is to get out there and spread the word, to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much, 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 much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget, you go to WGNRadio.com. You hit the prompt for podcasts. And then you go into the prompt for this specific podcast, and my goodness. There they are, just waiting for you to binge on. Go in there with an appetite. Go in there with an empty stomach. So you got lots to binge on. Keep lots of room empty. Just keep scrolling down and hitting play, and scrolling down and hitting play. It's good to know where we've been, so you'll always know where we're going. Right now, we're going to episode 382. On this podcast, if you have been a listener of any length of time, whether it's literally from episode 1 in May, I think it was May 24th. Thank you, Craig. May 24th, 2016. Or if you've been listening to me even before that on the radio, on WGN, back in the mid-2000s, right? Back in from 2009 when we were first on in the afternoons. I was on with Radio Hall of Famer and Chicago legend Gary Meyer. And so if you've been listening from even way back then, my gosh, I appreciate it so much. But even if you've somehow, you know, happened upon this podcast in the last month or year or 5 years, who knows when, whenever you've jumped on the bandwagon, if you will, whenever you hopped on board, once again, welcome, and we appreciate you taking the time. But I think if you've listened in any kind of extended period of time, as I always urge you to, if you're new to the podcast, to go back and listen to some older ones to get a flavor of what this podcast is all about. You get used to my cadence and my interests. I'm always trying to share as much with you as possible. As I always say, that I view this as a dialogue, even though it goes out to the world and, you know, many, many people can listen to it. I don't know how many do, to be honest. I hope millions. I doubt it very much. But I still go about this as a dialogue, regardless of how many people listen to it cumulatively. At the time, unlike radio, which is broadcasting, you're on the terrestrial radio or even on satellite radio, you got a big audience, broadcasting, thus the term. Podcasting is narrowcasting. You're speaking to one person, even though you're speaking to a lot of people at that moment, you're speaking to one person. I'm talking to you. Yes, many people may be listening to this at different times, and the odds that you're listening to at the same time are astronomical. You might as well buy a lottery ticket on that one. So, yeah, this is a sort of a two-pronged approach. You want to, from my standpoint, just to give you a little behind the scenes, you know, I try to come up with topics that I hope will be interesting to a broad audience, but I also believe that I'm talking to a very narrow audience when I'm doing it. In the actual discussion, I try to make it as conversational and as individualized as possible. I don't know each and every one of you, but I try to, at least in my presentation, talk on this podcast as if I was just talking to you. And so if you've listened with any kind of regularity, you know, what I do also for this on this podcast is try to bring parts of my own personality, my own likes and dislikes, certainly my opinions. I like to talk about big topics that may be in the news or universal topics that people can all relate to in a variety of topics or in a variety of subjects. I'll talk a little bit about politics, but in today's world, you know, everybody's doing that, and unless there's something really pressing, I try to stay away from that. But politics get involved. But as I say to you, I always try to be as objective as possible. I still try to remain, to some extent, like a reporter. Objective. In today's world, especially in broadcasting, on television and in radio, it is all subjective. And I still certainly give my opinions, which is subjective. But I try to do so, once again, in a way that is fair to both sides. I'll give my opinion, but I'll also try to at least address the other side and maybe say why I don't agree with that. But I don't just pile on the propaganda. And sometimes, as I said, I will talk about big, huge topics, and sometimes I will talk about some of the goofiest minutia that is worthy of a Seinfeld episode. And sometimes it's as quirky as possible, because I think in many ways I do have an interesting kind of quirky personality, and I look at things in a unique way that is entertaining and interesting for you. Like, oh wow, and maybe sometimes you listen to a podcast and I'm going off on something, and you're like, wow, I don't know where the hell you came up with that, or whoa, that's weird. That's fine, because that's what this is all about. Once again, it's a conversation between two people. And I view you as a friend, and I hope you view me just the same. Unfortunately, it's a one-way conversation. But as you can tell, I don't have trouble with a one-way conversation. I can usually fill at least an hour, and if you listen with any regularity, probably more than an hour. But that's fine. It's there for you, and you can turn it on and turn it off anytime you like. You can listen for 45 minutes and say, I'll wait. Oh, it's got another. Oh, my God, this is a long one. He's really jabbering today. I'll come back and listen later. That's fine. I don't know when you listen or how you listen. I just hope you do listen. So while a lot of the topics are of issues or different events that may have happened that are big, big news, a lot of times they're very small and very specific and very particular. That's what this one is today. And I enjoy this kind. I think it's up to me to stay current, and I want to make the podcast as topical and interesting as possible. And so, yes, I look for topics that we all can talk about and relate to, or that we know something about, and I will certainly offer my opinion, and I always have very strong opinions on things. But then, as I said, there's the little quirky side that I always, every so often I like to slip in there just to remind you there's hopefully a little something unique about this as well, because we can all talk about big topics all the time, right? I always talk about how, you know, I don't have any real proficiency in fixing things. You know, I have to call the guy, and I've shared many stories over the last several years about things that have happened around the house when I have to call the guy, call the man, just call the man. But this is one that I'll tell you, I would never have expected to devote a whole podcast to it. But then the more I thought about it, I said, no, this is right up my alley. And so that's why I do like to mine, if you will, topics, not only from the newspapers, not only from the internet, but from my life and from this kind of, at times, scattershot brain of mine. And this one is right out of real life. No two ways about it. It just happened a couple of days ago. In fact, I had another topic prepared to do, and I'm going to push that one back because I really thought this one would be interesting, and it was still fresh in my mind, so let me talk about it now. If you listen to me at all, you know that there are some things that I am, and I admit to this, I'm very anal, I'm very overly organized at times. I said I love to do lists, and I love to make a list and then check everything off. And I like when things are just right; they're in the right spot. Oh, wait a minute! You know, I mean, I walk around the house. We have a lot. I have a lot of different kind of collectibles of different things. The house is decorated in such a way that it really does reflect both mine and my wife's, wife's. I'm not living in Utah. I'm not a polygamist. Wife's, that's singular, interests and likes in terms of art and other things. And so we have quite a few different things around the house. And hopefully if you walked into our house, you would really get a sense of what we like or who we are just by looking around at the walls. It could be a sensory overload to some extent. There's very few spots. There's very few walls and spots that are not filled with something. But I like that. I would love for someone to come into my house the first time especially, or the 20th time, and walk around and go, I never saw that before. So a museum, no, not quite, but certainly has that kind of feel to it. But hopefully it's a homey kind of thing, not sterile like a museum sometimes is. But regardless, this today's topic certainly falls into the quirky side of an Elton Jim, but I'll have to. I think you can relate, or at least you can decide if I'm completely off my rocker, I'm completely wrong, or you'll go, well, let me see the next time I do this. For some reason, my wife is a very good baker. Very good baker. She loves to bake, and she's very good at it. What's interesting is she's not the greatest cook, which is fine. But what I think is really funny, and not that she has to be, I actually enjoy cooking, and I enjoy doing it. My dad used to like to cook. And I think I got that from him. My mom was a terrible cook, as I've said many times here. My joke used to be growing up, if Swanson doesn't make it, we don't eat it. And it wasn't that bad. Thankfully, we didn't eat Swanson frozen dinners all that much. We did, though, at a certain time. Or, you know, I mean, at times, but not very often. But When we did have really good meals, it was mostly my dad cooking them. I have to say, just as a little sideline here, the other day I was in the grocery store, and I was in the frozen food section. And, you know, we don't really eat a lot of frozen food, so I don't buy a lot of that. And so it had been a while since I'd been in the frozen food aisle. And my gosh, there are more frozen food aisles now than there are dry aisles in a grocery store, or pretty close to it. And the cases now are very elaborate. They're tall, and they have nice big doors. I mean, you know, they open wide. You could see everything. I mean, the refrigerated section of grocery stores now has really been upgraded in the last 5, 6, 7 years. At least as far as someone that I don't really go into the frozen food aisle all that often. And when I do venture in there, I'm going for something very specific. And that's the way I usually shop anyway. I have my list and I go right. I'm not a browser. I don't browse at anything. When I go shopping for anything, how many times do you even go to a store anymore to shop? Yeah, grocery store, yes, but you know, like, you know, to go to the store to buy a pair of pants or a pair of shoes, shirt or something like that. I mean, I've done most of my shopping over the last several years online now. Don't even really even go to a store. Some of the stores that I used to go to aren't even existence. They've closed their brick and mortar places. So I've never been a browser. Whenever I need, if I need to buy a couple of pair of jeans or I need a shirt, I go right there. I go to the section, I pick them up, and boom, I'm gone. I don't spend hours. And it's the same way when I go to the grocery store. Well, my wife wanted some frozen fruit. She's making some smoothies. And so I didn't even know where they were. Like I said, I'm so... have no knowledge of the sections of where things are. I know where things are. I really know. When I go to the grocery store, I go to the same grocery store, and I know where my stuff is. I am in the grocery store for about 15 to 20 minutes. That's all. Boom. I go. I have my 7 little different spots that I hit every week, and that's it. Boom. There's no, if my wife ever goes with me, every so often she'll go with me, and my head is spinning. Oh, my God. It's like, where is she? I'm already 8 aisles down. I'm looking back, and she's still looking. I'm like, wow. Oh, no lollygagging. That's one of my favorite phrases. No lollygagging. So I go to the frozen fruit aisle. I guess that's why I've been saying that word wrong. I go to the frozen food aisle trying to find the frozen fruit. And I'm going around trying to, you know, where is it? And I was just amazed. First of all, I mean, there's almost everything now that's frozen. There's a frozen version of everything. There always was a good amount of frozen foods, but it just seems like, and I mean, I must have been, as I said, I must be out of it. I don't go there, so I don't go in that section. Maybe it's been like this for a while, but it was sort of new to me. There's a frozen counterpart of anything. Obviously, frozen vegetables, yes, and things like that. And yes, the frozen dinner. But my gosh, now you're seeing so many specialty items. Frozen this, frozen that. Wow. I was in shock to see how many frozen pizza brands there are. In the grocery store that I went to, there was one aisle with freezers on both sides of the aisle that were filled with different configurations of pizzas. Whether they were full pizzas, there were slices of pizzas, there were half pizzas, there were stuffed pizzas and thick pizzas and thin pizzas. I was shocked. I was like, my God. I mean, I remember there used to be like 3 frozen pizzas. Geno's. I mean, it's been that long. Now there's Red Barons and DiGiorno's and home, a lot of well-known local pizzas from the Chicago area, like Connie's and Home Run Inn. But then there's some other brands I can't even remember off my head now, because I never heard of them before. Wow, a lot of people are eating frozen pizzas. I mean, we don't eat pizza all that much, but when we do order it fresh. You know, we go and get it. My favorite pizza is Lou Malnati's, but sometimes I'll go to another local place in my area for a thin crust. I like the Lou's deep dish. I'm not crazy about their thin crust, although they have a very good gluten-free pizza at Lou's, which I like. But like I said, we'll go to a few different places for a thin crust if we have a flavor for that. But we always just get it freshly made. We order it and go pick it up. But I wasn't aware of how many frozen pizzas. Are they that good? Has the frozen pizza technology? Now, I'm being honest with you. I mean, my experience with frozen pizza literally is going back 35 or 40 years. That's when I say Geno's Pizza. Yeah, I mean, people may not even know what that is. I'm sure they don't even make it anymore. I used to like the Geno's pizza rolls. They still make pizza rolls? Man, I tell you, I love a good pizza puff. I still love a good pizza puff. Mr. Submarine has good pizza puffs. You don't see pizza puffs around a lot. I bet you they have frozen pizza puffs at the grocery store. Now that I talk about this, the next time I go there, I'm going to actually really look in the frozen food aisle to see what they have. And I bet you they have pizza puffs in there. Oh, man, I love pizza puffs. Haven't had one of those in a long time. Sort of like a calzone. But I don't know. Maybe frozen pizzas are, when I was a kid, when that's the last time I really ate a frozen pizza, they were not very good. Now, maybe with time, and we've got all these gourmet chefs that are, you know, making these national products, maybe the technology of the frozen pizza has gotten better. I don't know. As I always say here, you know, I said at the beginning here, it's difficult. We're not doing a dialogue. But, you know, if you can go on my Facebook page, if there's a frozen pizza that you think is really good, let me know, would you? Because I was shocked to see just how many frozen pizza brands there were in the frozen food aisle at the grocery store. Wow. But anyway, so I have, you know, certain little things of mine that I do and I don't do. So here's a little here's a thing that my wife and I had a discussion about, and I was just like, you know what? I didn't even really know I had rules about this, but then as we started to discuss it, I realized I do. And I was talking about the frozen food aisle and the pizza, because my wife, as I said, for some reason, she's a very good baker, not a great cook. And so, you know, we have an oven that we use. She certainly uses it quite a bit, you know, when she bakes. And then we have, about 2 or 3 years ago, we bought a air fryer, which is the cool thing now, right? Everybody has an air fryer. But ours is a kind of combination one, too. It's by Black & Decker, and it's not very big at all. And you can actually do a few different things in it. And you can sort of use it like the old toaster ovens. We used to have one of those at my house when I grew up. My mom, as I said, you know, we rarely use the real oven. What my mom used the real oven for the most part, aside from making turkeys on Thanksgiving, was to store pots and pans. We really didn't use the oven. We used the toaster oven quite a bit. And so if my wife wants to toast something, if we have something that, you know, would be, instead of being microwaved, it would be toasted. It will taste better because, you know, when you put it in a microwave, it makes it hot, but it, you know, it doesn't crisp anything unless you have that crisper thing, which I still don't think works all that well. So she uses the air fryer on the, you know, on the toast setting, and she will toast something. Now, we have a toaster as well, but something else that's kind of bread-based, like a piece of pizza or something like that. And but inevitably, she always leaves it in just a tad too long to where it burns. And so it's become a kind of a rolling regular joke now that, you know, oh, she's going to use the toaster oven. And here you go. It's going to burn. Get the smoke alarms ready. Take the batteries out. She's moving toward the toaster oven. Get the batteries out of the smoke alarm because it's going to go off. And she is, you know, and I do this in, it's all in jest, but it never fails. And I think she's actually starting to get paranoid about it. So she will even like, well, it's not. Oh no, I like it. I like it a little crispier. You know, and I'll say, oh, it's, come on, I could smell it's burned. Turn it over. And then she turns it over. No, I like it dark. Like, okay, nobody likes it. Dark is one thing. Black is another. Black is, when it's black, it's burnt. You can smell it. And so the other day, you know how much I love pumpkin stuff. And I'm going to, and don't forget, don't worry, folks. I will talk about this fall's new pumpkin offerings. If you know anything about me, I know you know I love pumpkin spice, and this is my favorite time of the year when all these pumpkin spice products are out and are flooding the market. Some of them are really good, and some are wannabes. They're fake. They're not really pumpkin spice. They want to get in on it, but they're not really committing. I'll talk about that in a more in-depth in a way, maybe even next week. But for right now, let's just say I bought a pumpkin bread, pumpkin spice swirl bread by Thomas's, and it's pretty good. It's not bad. Now, we do have a toaster, and then we do have the toaster oven. But for some reason, even with the toaster, she always seems to burn the toast, even it's got the settings on it. Now, this is what I want to talk about, because we got into a discussion about this, so I wonder where you fall on this, and I'd love to get your reactions on my Facebook page. So, I didn't know I had rules for toast until we had this discussion. And then I realized that I really do have rules for toast. I have rules for a lot of things. And now I can add toast to the list of things I have rules for. So I don't know about you. Now, once again, I don't know if it's a part of, you know, do we like a certain thing because it's just the way that we were raised with it? Or do we like something because we got it when we were born, when we were raised, and our moms, whoever was cooking for us at the time, you know, until we were able to do things on our own, that we either really love the way the person did it, or we didn't like it, but it was almost, in those days, it was, hey, this is the way it's done. Eat it or not. And though, so then when we become adults or older, when we're doing ourselves, we rebel against the way it was done. Now, toast, if you think about it, toast is, you know, there are some elaborate things that take a lot of mastery and you have, attention to detail in terms of recipes. And, you know, people go to culinary schools. You know, there's an art. We know this. There's gourmet chefs. And then there's people that are just, They're not gourmet chefs, but they're good cooks. It was handed down from generation to generation, regardless of the sex. There's no question that 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was mostly women who were preparing the food at home. But that's certainly changed these days. And more men are into cooking. There's so many cooking shows. And so more men are into cooking than there used to be. So I would say that it's probably 50-50 at this point. And many people don't even cook from scratch. A lot of people now are ordering these meals that they give you all the ingredients, and then you cook them yourselves at home. Or you even get pre-made meals that you just put in the microwave or in the oven. So our whole world in terms of how we eat at home has changed drastically over the last 30 or 40 years. No question about that. Certainly the last 40 years or 50 years. But when you think about it, toast, which you would think, well, what's so big about toast? I would think that on the level of difficulty, making toast is probably your gateway to becoming someone that, or is your gateway into learning how to cook, right? When you're a little kid, your parents, I think, feel safer with you using the toaster initially. And it's, you know, I mean, think about it. The toaster, it seems like a toy. And I know you have to be careful, but you always hear this, you know, the warning, don't stick the knife or the fork in the toaster, you'll get electrocuted. I don't even know if that's true or not, because I have done that and I've never got electrocuted. So I don't know if that's just an old wives' tale or maybe it's true. Maybe I've just been lucky. But I mean, the toaster, from a child's standpoint, I think is that first mechanism, especially for food. I mean, when we're little kids, we all love food, right? Babies are always screaming for food. So little kids are really centered on food. And that toaster, it's like a toy. It's like a jack-in-the-box. You know, when you think about it, as a little kid, I mean, I wish I had the same innocence and ignorance of be able to remember what I thought of when I first saw a toaster work for the first time. Because it really is, not only is it a cool invention, but it's, if you're a little kid, it is entertaining. It's like a jack-in-the-box. I mean, think about it. There it is. It's, you know, it's usually, you know, looking metallic looking. So the toaster looks intimidating. Especially in today's world, it's got all that industrial look. It's always silver and, you know, it's either a matte finish or it's shiny, and it's got, you know, four slots or two slots or six slots, so it could be very big or very small, but the toaster always has its own personality and its own distinct look. And it's got those slots in it, you know, and then if you look inside, I mean, my God, how cool is that when you see those orange coils? So the toaster is, to me, a cool invention to begin with. But I have to think that, you know, and it's hard to look back and with the same kind of naive eyes that you've had. But I have to think that I was, the first time I had to look at the toaster, I had to think like that is one of the coolest toys that's around, and it's like a jack in the box. It really is. Think about it. You know, you've got those slots there, and you know you put the bread in, and then you know you hit that lever, and it disappears, just like a jack in the box, right? And then you're waiting. And then without any real notification or alarm, 1 minute you're waiting and the next, poof, the toast pops up back. I mean, I have to think, if you're a little kid, that's got to be an attention grabber, the toaster. And I would think that it's, you know, certainly it's an electrical appliance. So you have to be a little, safe with it. But I think when I'm thinking as a little kid, what was the first thing I ever did? I'm sure that I made toast for myself before I was allowed to use the range or the stove. I'm sure that, you know, it's kind of, as I said, that's why this toaster might be the gateway to the rest of your cooking experience. Because for the most part, it's still safe. There are certain things you have to be a little concerned about, but it's relatively safe. If it's plugged in and you put the two slices of toast, let's say it's a two slicer. Maybe you got a four slicer. Maybe you got a six slicer. Oh, wow, look at you. Or maybe an eight slicer. Wow. That's bragging rights there. I would think that eight slices about, do they make an eight slicer? I don't know. Once again, I was an only child. We didn't need to make eight slices of toast at one time or six slices of toast at one time. So let's get the standard two slice just to be safe here. But I have to think that if you're going to introduce a child as they begin to get older and you're giving them a little more, responsibility and, you can make your own toast. I think that's where you start. Before you go to the stove, and certainly before you go to the oven, I think you start with the toaster, don't you? Now, in these days, it might be the microwave, certainly. But, when I was a little kid, there wasn't a microwave yet. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know that. How could there not have been a microwave? I mean, there was. The microwave oven technology was around, but everyone didn't have a microwave oven until, at least in my world, until like the late 70s or early 80s. So as a little kid, we still had the toaster oven or the toaster. So now I guess today, now that I think about it, but I still think that the toaster is more exciting to watch and fun if you're a little kid because of that surprise factor. You don't know when the toast is going to pop up. I mean, sure, the microwave has its entertainment value, right? Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, you put it in, you see it through the little window. Most microwaves, they have the plate that moves, so there's motion, and you can hear it. It's humming. Many times you can see through that window things cooking, and if you have something with cheese, it quickly bubbles within seconds. So there's no question. I mean, the microwave really is almost like a mini television, right? The window is a little foggy for the most part, but it's almost like a screen. And it's easy to work, right? You hit, and in today's world, my God, you hit one, and it's express for a minute. You don't even have to hit the 130 start thing or whatever you're doing. They've made it as simple as possible. So now, I guess, in the modern age, perhaps the microwave oven, more than the toaster, is the thing that kids will probably learn first, now that I think about it. But in terms of at least when I was growing up, in terms of what looked to be like a different kind of toy, it was up on the counter, first of all. And, the counter at that time when your kid is always higher than you was kind of out of your reach. So the toaster, because of that, what goes on in the microwave too, you can't really burn yourself while it's cooking. But as I said, the toaster, you could get a little adventurous and want to stick your hand in there. So there is a little danger to the toaster. But when you're a little kid, you're on the ground, you're looking up at the counter, and that toaster is up there, so it's just far enough. But my gosh, as I said, the excitement of when the toast pops up, that's jack-in-the-box kind of entertainment that I still enjoy. In fact, I wish, And now here's another idea I'm throwing out to you, you toaster makers. In today's world, you mean to tell me that you can't have a musical toaster? Do they have, and once again, I don't know. Maybe they have this. But this is getting to my main point here about what I'm going to really want to talk about is, are you a light toast fan, a dark toast fan, or a burnt toast fan? Some people like burnt. I don't know how you could like that. Maybe you like it because your mom or whoever made you toast always burnt it, and you grew up liking burnt. But certainly there's dark and there's light. And then there's ultra light, where the toast, where the bread is barely toasted. It's just kind of warm. But that's the great thing about the toaster, is that that surprise, the toast, it goes away, it disappears, and then it comes back. But my point is, as I'm just thinking about this now, I can't believe that they can't make, on the settings, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Maybe there's 5 settings on how light or dark you want your toast. I don't know how, there's just 1, 2, I mean, those to me are, they're arbitrary numbers. I don't know what the one, I don't know if 1 is a minute, 2 is 2 minutes, 3. I don't know if it works on a minute. I'm not sure how it works. But all I know is there are some times when it seems like that toast will never be done. Now, at the end of the day, it's probably 3 to 4 minutes, right? At most. I never timed it. I should. But there's some times when you just want a quick piece of toast, and it seems like forever. And a lot of times you bypass the timer and you just pop it out. Okay, I'll take it, whatever shape or form it's in. And I am very impatient when it comes to toast or even in the microwave. They say 3 minutes in the microwave. That is the longest three. When you're hungry, that is a long 3 minutes. I mean, I try to leave the room and go do something so I won't just be watching the numbers count down. But I do know that for the most part, I always bypass the toaster timer and pop the toast before it was officially done according to the timer. I always do it. And sometimes I'll even say, well, instead of me doing that, I'll set it for a lower time. I'll set it for on 2 or 3. And then I will still hit it. And sometimes then, of course, the bread is barely, it's not even toast. It's not even warm yet. So that's what I really want to talk about. What is your favorite kind of toast? Do you have rules for toast? Because I think I do. I didn't think I did, but I as I talked about it, and maybe I was devising the rules as I was talking about it, but I do know I don't like dark toast. I like either medium or even less than, that less than medium toast? Where, as I said before, there's just a hint of browning, where the bread still might even be pliable. So I'm always, I'm a premature toast maker. I'm a premature toast ejector, if you will. Notice I put toast in there. But I'm a premature toast ejector. And so I obviously like my toast on the light side. Now, I remember, as I said, my mom could ruin toast. She was not good at even making toast. I think that's why I rebelled against her toast. And that's why I then go to the other opposite side, where the toast that I eat most of the time, or that I have most of the time, is either due to two things: my impatience, Like, when is this toast going to come out? Or my preference for it to be on that lighter side. And I'm trying to get that perfect timing down where, as I said, I like the toast, the bread to even be a little still pliable. Because I remember when my mom made toast, it was like a rock. It was hard. And you'd put the butter on it, and the butter didn't even want to melt on it. Because it was like the butter almost slid off of it because it was so burnt. And you could taste the burn. I'm not big on burnt stuff. That's why people say, I'm not crazy about barbecue food. I like it, but I'm not crazy about it because I'm not, everybody's like, oh, look, it's got the great burn marks on it. Oh, this has got that burnt flavor to it. I always think, basically, in my view, barbecue food, at least to my taste buds, if I were to cook a hamburger in a skillet on a stove in the house, and I were to char it, I mean, char is another word to me. Char is burnt. If you char something, I think it's burnt. I think even in the dictionary, it means burnt or certainly severely cooked. Now, we have given great prominence to char broiled and char this and char that. But, and maybe it goes back to the way my mom used to cook. But if I made you a hamburger on a skillet inside the house, not outside, not without tongs, not without grills, and not without the charcoal and all the accoutrements that go into the charcoal experience, and believe me, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there, and you're saying, screw you, Jim, I love to barbecue, it's my thing, I can appreciate that. I have a grill. I used to grill a lot more than I do now, but I did it. I get it. I have the tongs. I got into the whole thing. And if you like to barbecue, maybe some people barbecue all summer. That's all they eat, is barbecued everything. That's great. I'm not putting it down at all. I think it's great that you do that. And if that's something that you enjoy doing, more power to you. But I always look at it like it's kind of burnt. It's charred. If I gave you a hamburger that was charred inside the house, that I made in the house without the tongs, without your apron on that says, you know, cook of the house and all that stuff. You know, you weren't out there scrubbing your grill and getting your charcoal or turning it on and getting all your you know, and marinating and all the stuff that goes in, rubbing, all the stuff that goes into barbecue cooking. I understand it's a whole process. It's a whole experience. I get it. If you are a barbecuer, more power to you. I think it's great. Go nuts. But I do also think there are times when people that are barbecuing, they burn it. But then they, it's on the grill. It's impossible to burn anything when it's on the grill. I think that's a cop-out. I think you could burn stuff on the grill. If I gave you a hamburger that I made inside the house and charred it, to the same degree that sometimes you get fed a barbecued hamburger by someone, because everybody thinks that, you know, there's some people that think they're great grillers and they aren't, and you go by their house and you kind of eat it anyway, right? But you know that. Let's be honest. But when it's on the grill and it's burnt, when it's charred, you say, oh, okay, great. But if I gave you that thing, you say, I'm not eating this hamburger. It's burnt. So I think there's also something else going on in there. But regardless, you can have really dark burnt toast. And I'm not a fan of dark toast. Some people do. I dark toast. You see them when they go out to the restaurant. You know, they have some, you know, toast on the side. Yeah, can you make it dark? Make it dark. Sometimes it comes to you and it's just, they don't even ask you. And it's, to me, when at a place, if I order toast, I say, can you make it on the light side? I say that because it seems like for the most part, when you go to a restaurant and they give you toast, it seems like the toast is more on the dark side, if not even a little burnt. That's not my thing. Whether it's my impatience or I just have grown to like it. But I like to have my toast a little pliable. It seems to me that the bread, that the butter or whatever you're putting on it melts better when it's not overly toasted. When it's lightly toasted, it seems like the butter melts better. Maybe that's just my perception. But the other day, my wife was using the toaster, making toast, and I was sitting at the table. My back was to her. And I said, oh, you're making toast, huh? She said, yes. And I said, you better pop it. It smells like it's burning. No, it's not. You know, she pops it out. And sure enough, I'm not even facing her. And this is where my rule then was, my first rule of toast, which I didn't even know I had a first rule of toast, but I guess I have a first rule of toast. And I formulated it on the spot about 3 days ago with my back to her. And this is how I knew that the toast was burnt. Aside from the smell, it wasn't overly burnt, but it was getting there. It was right on the verge, another 10 seconds. And I'll tell you, that's the one thing about a good toaster. It only takes 10 seconds more for that toast to go from good to burnt. Every toaster is different. You have to get a sense for your toaster. You have to really play with your toaster. And, you know, I would say that the first day you buy a toaster, you should buy at least a half a loaf of bread. And just make toast and put it on every setting to see where it goes. Okay, that's one. That's not going to happen. Two, well, maybe I like it at two. Three, well, maybe three is too long. So maybe I got to wait when I put it on three and then I have to maybe hit it a little earlier. Maybe four, it depends. But five to me isn't, on any toaster, five is too much. You're gonna get my mom's toast. You know, it's gonna be like a rock. I want my toast to be bendable. I like to break my toast when I'm eating it. And I'll get on the whole subject of English muffins in a second. But we're just talking about right now about wheat or white bread toast. So I have my back to her, and I'm going out on my little, you know, kind of half-serious, half-joking rampage, you know, tirade about toast and how she burnt it again. And I said, you burnt it. And she's like, no, I didn't. It's the way I like it. It's not burnt. Look. And I said, I don't have to look. I was listening to her buttering the toast. And so on the spot, I said, I can tell it's overdone. I can tell it's burnt because I can hear you spreading the butter on the toast. If the toast makes noise, and you know that toast noise, that scratchy toast noise, when toast is burnt or it's made too much, the bread is hard. And the butter, as I said before, it's not soaking in because the bread is like, it's tough, it's flat. And so when you burn the toast, or you actually crack the toast, it's like ice sometimes. It cracks. And you can hear, when you're toasting, you can hear the knife spreading that toast, and it's scratching. The butter is, the knife and the butter are creating friction because that toast is so burnt, and then it's cracking. And you know that sound. I know you know it. In my view, the perfect piece of toast, I should not be able to hear it being buttered. If I hear that scratchy sound of the knife scraping against the toast as you're buttering it, I know it's been overdone. So that's my rule of toast. I don't have to see it. I don't have to smell it. I know that a piece of toast is either cooked too long or burnt, not by sight and not by smell, but by sound. To me, the perfect piece of toast, you can't hear the knife buttering it. I mean, think about it. When you butter a plain piece of bread that hasn't been toasted, do you hear anything? Of course not. There's nothing to make a sound. You have soft butter and soft bread. No sound. As you start to toast, you're creating a frictional type of surface. If you go too far, you get that scratchy, burnt sound, which tells me too much. But if you make the toast at the correct level, you can still toast it, and it will not make a sound. It may make a little sound, certainly much more than just buttering a dry piece of bread. That makes no sound. But if you're sitting at the table and somebody is a few feet away from you at the toaster, buttering their toast, if you can hear them buttering or jamming or jellying their toast or peanut buttering their toast, whatever it is, if you can hear that, it's done too much. So that is my rule of toast. If you can hear the buttering, it's done too much. That's the way I can view it. Now, as I said, from the look of it too, yes, I like it just a little lightly, not a lot, just lightly. It's not raw. It's not just bread right out of the package. There's a brown to it. There's a little toast thing. But certainly, it's not dark. Certainly, the ends of the thing aren't burnt. It's pliable still. Where you can actually, you can tear it. That's the difference. You can tear the piece of bread. You can tear the toast. But if it's burnt or it's made too much, you break it. It snaps. It's like a piece of wood. Your toast should not snap, and it should not crack, and it should not scratch. Your toast should tear. and it shouldn't make a scratching sound. To me, that is the rule of toast. Now, I'll tell you, the tougher part is definitely the English muffin. Not easy. That one's a tough one. I would actually say, and as a fan of the English muffin, and I love a good English muffin, as a fan of the English muffin, I would say if you really want a consistent English muffin, I don't know if you can use a toaster. Because I think if you use a toaster oven, which does usually have the glass, you can look in there, you want a perfectly toasted muffin. I mean, the goal to an English muffin is those little holes, right? The little holes in the muffin. But your goal is that you want the tips of all of those little holes to just be a tad brown. Not a lot. Once again, if I can hear you buttering your muffin, it shouldn't be scratchy. You don't want a scratchy muffin. Double entendres flowing left and right here. You don't want a scratchy muffin. You don't want a burnt muffin. You want a soft muffin. You want one that's just bare, that's just lightly brown. If I can hear you buttering your muffin, then it's cooked too much. You've burnt your muffin. You don't want to burn your muffin. Bagels are the same way. You don't want to over, you know, I mean, some people, I mean, you shouldn't really, I don't even think you should toast a bagel. But they are good toasted, don't get me wrong. But you can't over taste, you can't overdo it. You're going to ruin it. The great thing about a great bagel is its pliability. You can almost scrunch it. So it's okay to lightly toast it. But you don't want to burn it. You just don't want to burn your toast of any kind. You want to burn your bread. You don't want to burn your muffin, certainly. And you don't want to burn your bagel. And to me, I think a good rule of thumb is that if you can hear yourself, if you can hear the buttering with the knife, it's burnt. Now, here's my idea for the toaster real quick. You know, all these different settings. Well, can't we have like a little song? Like the Jeopardy song. I would think in today's world, with all the technology, you can plug in your, you know, your phone or your device with wherever your music. You can plug it into anything. Music, you can get music in your refrigerator and everything. So why can't every setting on the toaster have a little song? And when the song is done, then you know that it's going to pop up. So now if I know what the song is on 3, for instance, and I don't want it to go all the way to 3, I still don't know where it is in that cycle. But if there was a song playing and I got to know the third setting song, I would know that song is almost done and I'm going to punch it. I'm going to lift that toast out early. So why can't I have a musical toaster with a different song, with a different length of a song to match the length of the time that each setting is for the toast? I think that would be a great idea. A musical toaster would help me to make my perfect setting of the type of toast that I want, so that I wouldn't be hearing anybody scratching their toast from halfway across the kitchen. So, let's review. Everybody has their own taste of toast. Maybe you like this. If you like a burnt toast, more power to you. That's great. But if you're not a fan of the burnt toast, I think the scratching sound is the determining factor of whether you've burnt the toast or not. And I have to say that when if you burn a piece of toast, I mean, I know today bread is not cheap, but I mean, if you've burnt a piece of toast, I would throw it out. Start over. Because toast, I really do like toast. And if it's burnt, it's not fun. It's not good. So that's another thing. I know it's terrible to waste food, but if you burn a piece of toast too much, when it cracks, that's not even, you're not throwing away food. You're throwing away a failure. You failed at toast. So throw it out and start over again. But I think a good rule of thumb is, for a good piece of toast, your toast should break instead of crack, and it should be relatively silent when you butter it, if it's scratchy or loud when you are buttering. It's too much. And I think if you follow that simple rule, it's not that crazy. It's not that hard to follow. You don't even have to be able to look at it. As I said, I could tell when my wife, I could have my back to my wife and know if she burnt a piece of toast. So go by the sound of the toast. And I believe that you will have a very enjoyable toasted bread experience every time. The quieter the toast, the better the toast. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 382. I'm Elton Jim. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.